Accession number 31072, Reel 2.
It could happen, because you can have shells explode alongside, even over the noise of the engine, you still hear it. And on a bomber escort, one particular time, unfortunately, I saw one of the bombers got hit, and it just blew up in, but that was just something in the dark sky that suddenly blew up, and I knew what it was. But I was doing what you call a Jim Crow, that's a weather reconnaissance. And there was two of us, myself and John Manley, who was my roommate. He was flying number one and number two. And we went over Holland, and we got hit with flak. We were about 150, 200 feet up. And there was flak was absolutely intense, it was like Dante's Inferno. And 1 minute we're flying in formation, just coming off the Dutch coast to get into a position to do a Jim Crow, when all this flak, we didn't know we were over at Imoyden, but when in fact we were over Imoyden, and it was heavily fortified with AK guns and the like, and they really let go at us. And it was like in the middle of Dante, there was traces all over the place. So all I remember is stick back and full throttle on my tail trying to get out of it, and John had been hit in the fuselage, and his rudder and aileron control had been shot away. And when we formated off the coast, we got out of it eventually, and he called up and said he'd had engine trouble. And I've managed to formate on him, but he was losing smoke and he'd been hitting the engine. And he tried to bail out, but with a single engine fighter, there's only two ways you can get out. One was putting nose heavy and going out over the top of the fuselage, or rolling on the back and dropping out upside down. Well, John tried to roll on the back, but with having rudder and aileron control going, he went into what you call an inverted spin. He spun upside down and the pressure was onto his cockpit. So his aircraft was going down. He tried to bail out, but his aircraft went down into the sea. And just before he hit the North Sea, I saw a flash of white, so he must have pulled his canopy and tried to get out of his cockpit, you know. But he was lost. But it's a beautiful car. It was pre-selective gears. One of the few I'd ever seen with pre-selective gears. And of course, 21 horsepower was very heavy on the juice, but it didn't worry us because I'd get 100 octane aircraft fuel, you know, and then drop it up with a bit of oil. Well, it used to be funny in the mess. You get the engineering officer suddenly turn around and give the tip off. He said, Ministry of Transport official coming. So you'd see a dirty great scatter then. All the cars would be out on the perimeter tracks and all the plugs out, the petrol, draining all the petrol off, so the Ministry of Transport couldn't catch with aircraft fuel. He's running out and half-shaved and in their underpants and God knows what, out to the perimeter tracks, draining all the petrol off. As I say, all right, it was a beautiful aircraft. It had a stainless steel cylinder block you could fry an egg on the top, you know, it was that clean, Paddy's hairs. Well, it was a toss between a Hurricane and a Spit. The Mustang, you see, the different aircraft were good for the jobs they were made for to do. The Hurricane would take a lot more knocking about than what a Spit would. It wasn't as easy to fly. A Hurricane was a kind of a bigger, higher off the ground, heavier aircraft. A Spit was like the Thoroughbred. You know, the slightest touch on your controls and she'd respond, you know. It was so beautiful, smooth to fly and things like that. The Spit was, no doubt about it, the Spit was one of the best fighter aircraft ever. And the various spots with Spit 1, various, it went out with Spit 21 and modified different engines in and improvements and clip wings. The Spit 16, for instance, had a Packard engine, had clip wings, it had a Stromberg carburetor, which meant it had more power lower down, you know, and odd versions like that. But of the two, you could say one, Typhoon. Now, Typhoon was a terrific job with the rockets. Nothing could stand them. I mean, as far as taking out pillboxes and tanks and things like that, Typhoon was on the spot. Because he used to have, I'm just trying to think of the caliber. I think it was £40. I think it was a £40 warhead, each rocket, and you had eight of them. You could fly them. You could fly them singly. You could fly them in pairs. You could fly a salvo. So if you fly the whole salvo, it'd knock out a hell of a big building, you know. So each aircraft was good for the jobs they were doing. But as far as aerial combat's concerned, a Spit and Hurricane, if you had, for instance, both equally experienced pilots on a Hurricane and a Spitfire, and both knew the strength of each other, it'd be a draw. They'd give up in the end, because once the Spit got on Hurricane's tail, well, he could go on his wingtip, kick on rudder, and well, stand on his wingtip and do a very, very tight turn, and a Spit could never get inside to get deflection on him. So he's to shoot at him on a turn, he's got to fire ahead of it, so he's got to turn inside that. And the Spit could never turn tight enough, he'd be missing him all the time. So he'd give up, you know. And at the same time, if Hurricane got on the Spit, all the Spit would roll on his back and dive, and Hurricane would never catch him. The volunteers, other than the regular Air Force, the volunteers, we were taking on what you call DFPE, Duration of Present Emergency. So we were the very first to be demobbed. And I don't remember my father's advice, I should have taken it. He said either stay in or go into Civil Airlines. He said, because it's taken thousands and thousands of pounds to train you, and you're throwing it away. And at that particular time, how do you put it? Winnie Churchill said the fighter command was cream of the nation's youth, but the nation, the cream turned sour after the war, because fighter command were the ones that were no good at all. Bomber command at least had multi-engine time, they could go into civil airlines and the like, but all we were trained to do was fly a fighter aircraft. Well, the war was over, nobody wanted to fight, and that's all we were used to. The cream had turned sour, you know. Yeah, yeah. Well, I had two particular mates before I joined up. One went in the Navy, one went in the Army. And of course we split up after the war. The Army lad went as a teacher. I don't know what happened to Jimmy. Jimmy would have been. But he was in the Navy, I don't know what happened to him. But all split up, you know. And of course at the end of the war I'd married then, you know. I went in as a single man and I came out married man. Clerical officer with the Ministry of Transport, pushing petrol coupons. Well, it gave me a different slant on life. I found I made some terrific friends, and I realised the true meaning of true friends. You know, I mean, the lads during the war that wouldn't think twice of giving the life for the mates, kind of thing. There was that much there, you know, and the friendship was absolutely terrific, you know. Even the people in the streets, you know, were so friendly, and I don't know. There was a lot of family unity about it, you know, and I think it brought me down to earth. I appreciated, you know, a true friend. And things did change. It was surprising after the war how things did change, you know. And they did change. You know, you go back to the old places expecting to be the same, but unrecognisable, you know. So different. I don't know whether it was the atmosphere, I don't know what it is, you know. But you can understand now, you can never do now what we used to do then, you know. I mean, people never lock the doors and things like that. But everybody was everybody's mate, you know. But particularly in the forces, the squadrons were very, very tightly knit, you know. And as I say, you know, things happen that quick. I don't know if you've seen that thing, but it's typical, you know. The actually that film was on BBC Two, and it was the last fighter station.